أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته And welcome back to Ramadan Reflections. Today being the 15th day of the blessed month of Ramadan, we've now reached the midway point of this blessed month. A month of mercy, of blessings, of favors of Allah. As we continue on in our review of being in the presence of the Prophet through the verses of the Quran which highlight this magnificent man's journey from an orphan to being the leader of a religion, the final religion that would change the face of history forever, we move on to another phase of his life. And this is the migration to the city of Medina. Now, as we've seen throughout this entire series to this point, throughout the early years of the life of the Prophet, we saw how the Prophet Muhammad, may God bless him and his family, was never left alone by Allah. He may have lost his father, mother, grandfather, uncle, wife, two sons, his two infant sons. However, Allah continues to shower him with blessings and protect him no matter what was going on around him. Just as for you and I, brothers and sisters, Allah never leaves us alone in the darkness. There is always a light. As long as we find and we look for that light, we will be engulfed by it. But if we don't look for the light and we don't use the light, then obviously God can only do so much for us. We have to do for ourselves as well. In any case, you know, the Prophet was going through all of these challenges and hardships and blessings and everything combined together. On the other hand, however, we keep in mind that the polytheists were still hell-bent on killing this man. Either getting him to be quiet and end his mission, or do away with him and end the mission on their own terms. Really, the polytheists had just about had enough of the man and his teachings. They were tired of this new religion, as they would call it, or that it was referred to as. They were tired of this revolutionization of society in which the Quraysh found the ways of the Prophet to be a threat to the establishment. How can you say a black man and an Arab, for example, are equal terms? How can a poor and a rich be considered equal in the sight of a God? How can there be economic equality where the rich have to provide and pay taxes that can be given to the needy in society? All of these and many other areas, as I said, threaten the Quraysh establishment. They thought, however, that they could pay the Prophet off, give him all the money that they had or that he wanted, give him the most beautiful women of Mecca and beyond, give him power to be a king, to be a ruler, and that he would just keep quiet. But as the Prophet would tell his uncle Abu Talib, peace be upon him, when he was alive, that even if they were to put the sun in my right hand and the moon in my left, meaning give me everything, I would never stop this mission. He didn't need the money. He didn't need the women. He didn't need the power that these other people thought would be easily to bribe a person with. And so the polytheists thought hard and long what they could do to silence him. Boycotts didn't work. Economic embargoes were pointless. Bribes were worthless. Character assassination didn't work. You call him a madman, you call him a sorcerer, you call him a poet, you call him all of these things. None of these things were providing the results that they had hoped for. They had hoped to silence the man, and nothing would keep him quiet. Day by day, people were coming to the faith. Day by day, people were converting. People were coming into Islam. The Quraysh recognized that there was only one thing that could silence the Prophet. Kill him. Simple as that. Just kill the man. Get it over with. With the death of the man comes the death of the message, right? Or so they thought. So a plan was hatched that a large contingent of polytheists from various tribes, because they didn't want to pin the blood on one tribe alone, that they said, let us have multiple people be there and all strike at the same time. We don't know which strike will kill him, but we'll all be a part of it. And his people can't attack all of us. All of our tribes number and maybe in the tens of thousands. They can't fight all of us. So the plan was hatched that a group of them would gather with swords, surround his house in the middle of the night, and when he woke in the morning, They would attack him in a joint sneak attack mission and kill him in his house, in his bed. They were forgetting the fact that they were dealing with a man who receives direct revelation from a higher source, from Allah. How are you going to plan against the prophet when God is telling him directly what's going to happen? They didn't realize with the event of Mi'raj that he has connection to an unseen world. What they thought, that they could easily plan and he wouldn't be ready for the attack and he would let them kill him like this? They were sorely mistaken, as many other people in history have been, who thought the prophet did not receive revelation or communication from God. And so the Prophet Muhammad, may Allah bless him and his family, was informed of their plans by Allah. And Allah himself had plans for the Prophet. What to do? How to make your escape from Mecca without being noticed? How to plan in your absence what's going to happen to the women and children and other Muslims? What will happen? What will be the method that you need to put into place? Allah taught and let the Prophet know things that he had to do, and that the Prophet obviously created the blueprint for how to move forward. And so eventually a decision was made to leave the city of Mecca and to go towards Yathrib. As we said, a town or a city that will later be named Madinatun Nabi. Again, Allah does not leave the Prophet alone. Allah has guided the Prophet all throughout his early childhood, his infancy, childhood, his manhood, up to the time of prophethood. 13 years in Mecca, Allah is guiding the Prophet. And now Allah is guiding the Prophet once again to get ready to leave and to go to his new home. The plan was simple: travel from Mecca to Medina. One of the individuals named Abu Bakr would travel with the Prophet. They would make their way stealthily to Medina, and there they would basically create their new state. However, how could he pull all of this off on his own? The Quraysh were definitely casing the house, making sure that the Prophet was in the house. If they saw him leave, obviously they would have to change their plans. So somebody had to be left behind in Mecca to pretend to be the Prophet. He had to be, you know, sleeping in the bed of the Prophet. It had to make it seem like he was the Prophet in height and stature and everything. But who was brave enough? Who's willing to sell their soul for the pleasure of God? Who's willing to put their life on the line to have swords chop them up into pieces for the safety and protection of the Prophet and this religion? Well, I would tell you this, that there's only one man who could do that. And that is none other than the commander of the faithful, the prince of the believers, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib. May God's peace and blessings be upon both of them. He had the bravery, the courage, the stamina, the agility, the love, the devotion, the commitment, the passion, the zeal to protect the messenger of God. And he told the Prophet, if I sleep on your bed, does that guarantee, or does that mean you will be safeguarded? The Prophet said, yes. He said, then I'm ready to go. I don't even have to ask any questions. My life is given at your sacrifice, O Messenger of God. So the answer was simple. The Prophet would leave with Abu Bakr, and Imam Ali would show his bravery and courage and sleep on the bed of the Prophet in Mecca and sacrifice his life for the Messenger of God. May Allah bless him and his family. The Prophet told Imam Ali, look, if you live, you have a responsibility. You have a double responsibility. One, I'm going to give you all of the amanat, all the trusts that I have. People have given me money and gold and this and that. You have to give all of those back to the people. Because I am as-sadiq and al-ameen, I'm trustworthy, I'm truthful. I have people's trusts with me. They might not be Muslims, but you have to give those back to them. Your second responsibility, Ali, the Prophet says, is the women and children. You have to bring them all to safety to Medina. Your job is going to be the head of the caravan. You're going to be guiding the ummah from Mecca to Medina. That includes your mother, Fatima bint Asad. That includes your future wife, which obviously at that time was not known as the future wife, as the daughter of the Prophet, Fatima bint Muhammad. May Allah bless both of them. And other women and other children and other companions, your job will be to bring all of them as the caravan leader to Medina. But if you die, you're going to be a martyr in the way of God. So either way, you are victorious. If you live, you meet me in Medina, you're victorious. You die, you're killed in my way, In the way of God, you are victorious. So as the historians tell us, the prophet leaves with his travel companion, takes a less traveled route, a less known route, and waits for 3 days and nights in the cave of Thor, ensuring that the enemies had lost the trail before they leave and then go to north to Medina. Now this is chronicled in the Quran, in the verse which I want to reflect upon today, in verse number 40, from chapter number 9. In this verse, Allah says, إِلَّا تَنْصُرُهُ فَقَدْ نَصَرَهُ اللَّهُ إِذْ أَخْرَجَهُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا ثَانِيَ اثْنَيْنِ إِذْ هُمَا فِي الْغَارِ إِذْ يَكُولُ لِصَاحِبِهِ لَا تَحْزَنْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ مَعَنَا فَأَنزَلَ اللَّهُ سَكِينَتَهُ عَلَيْهِ وَأَيَّدَهُ بِجُنُودٍ لَمْ تَرَوْهَا وَجَعَلَ كَلِمَةَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا سُفْلَى وَكَلِمَةُ اللَّهِ هِيَ الْعُلْيَا وَاللَّهُ عَزِيزٌ حَكِيمٌ. God says, if you do not help him, the messenger, yet for certain, God helped him when those who disbelieved drove him out of his home during the Hijrah. The second of the two, when they were in the cave, with those in pursuit of them having reached the mouth of the cave, and he said to his companion, do not grieve, God is surely with us. Then God sent down his gift of inner peace and reassurance on him, meaning on the prophet, supported him with hosts, armies you cannot see, and brought the word of the unbelievers utterly low. And God's words or his cause is always and inherently supreme. God is all glorious with all irresistible might, all wise. In this beautiful verse, God shows us, and we'll just do a very brief analysis of it, but we see that in the history, first of all, that a few days after this event, thanks be to God, the prophet reaches to the city or the outskirts of Medina safe and sound, but he refuses to enter until his brother arrives, his brother being Imam Ali alayhi salam. He knew that one person was missing, and once he comes and is there with the prophet, then they enter into Medina together. As we know, Imam Ali alayhi salam survived the attack on the house of the prophet. And when the Quraysh found that the Prophet had left, he was gone, they realized their plans had been thwarted in the most amazing way. The commander of the faithful eventually made his way with the women and others and brought them to safety to start a new life in their new home of Medina. However, before I conclude, you know, this verse that we review for today, it presents us with a few important points, and there's much more that people have asked, but we can't go into all the details. Allah shows us that he helped the Prophet once again in one of the most intense periods of his life when he was being kicked out of his home, out of the city of Mecca. Number two is Allah shows us that he traveled with an individual, Abu Bakr, and they reached a cave in which they sought shelter. Allah shows us that his travel companion, this man who was traveling with the Prophet, was utterly frightened. He was scared of being chased and maybe even being killed. And the Prophet had to console him and remind him that Allah is there. Why are you scared? Don't you believe in God? Inna Allaha ma'ana. God is with us. He will protect us. He's protected us for 13 years in Mecca. What's a few days in a cave? Number four is Allah sends down peace and tranquility, the Sakina, to the Prophet of Islam, the Prophet Muhammad, may Allah bless him and his family. Not to the companion of the Prophet in the cave, but to the Prophet. And an army is sent, an army of unseen soldiers is sent to safeguard the beloved messenger of God. Ultimately, with this, brothers and sisters, we know that the Prophet made it to Yathrib with Imam Ali, arriving a few days later. And this would now signal a major change in the dynamics of this new faith. No longer would the Muslims live under fear and threat of a Quraysh boycott, embargo, sanction, threat of war, annihilation. Now they were free to practice Islam openly and to lay the foundations for the first Muslim state governed by the Prophet Muhammad. May Allah bless him and his family. Medina would also be a unique place where the rules of Islam would begin to come down in greater number and at greater speed to guide the Muslims on how to perform basic acts of worship and much more. And one of the actions, or one of the first rules that would come down to the Prophet is the direction of the Salat. Up until this point, for the first 13 years, they were praying their daily prayers facing towards Jerusalem, a holy city, a city of Islam, a city of the Muslims. But now God would show us that they had to change their direction, their goal, their focus. Now the goal was Mecca. The direction was Mecca. The Qibla would be Mecca. Join us tomorrow in Ramadan Reflections for the 16th day of the month of Ramadan as we explore the change of the Qibla. What happened? How did it happen? When did it happen? Where did it happen? Why did it happen? We will try and answer all of these tomorrow in Ramadan Reflections. Until then, wassalamu alaikum jamian wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.